moved out to LA from Michigan, correct?
Yeah, like I was in, you know, various like club bands, you know, and you played on, you know, everybody back there mostly did cover songs. Very few bands did originals back then. And it was kind of right out of high school, you know. But my first band, we actually played a lot of cool gigs and gigged around in, I know if you watch TV at all, the Counting Cars TV show, but Danny Coker, it's a pretty big show. It's in Vegas. And he's got a band called Count 77. They're playing all the festivals now. And his bass player, Barry Barnes, was in my band.
Michigan or LA?
Yeah, Michigan. Yeah. Okay. That was like 40 years ago. So, a long time ago. But
yeah,
I got to see him when I came out here. Danny's a real cool guy. And I'm going to go probably check him out when I go out to Vegas, you know, if they're doing a show and stuff. But, I started there, but basically I wanted to do originals. So I just kind of like moved out to LA. I knew like one person that worked at a music store, and he hooked me up. He happened to work at a guitar center. So basically he hooked me up with a manager. I got a job like the next day. So I was really lucky.
When you got
to make money out there. So expensive. Yeah.
I was going to ask if you knew anybody in LA, like you just went out to LA just by yourself. I didn't know.
I knew one person basically that, you know, and I got a job at Guitar Center, and there I met like everybody. Like I was still worked with a lot of the bands afterwards, like Leatherwolf, you know, Striper was in there. Members of Kiss. I mean, just, you know, Alan Holdsworth, which is a big guitar god when he passed away.
What year was this when you went out there?
That's like the mid 80s. I went out there.
So right at the height of everything, pretty much.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, it's like, there's like concerts like every night. You know, Guns N' Roses is just breaking at that time. So, you know, Warrant wasn't even really out yet, but they were just, I think that, you know, I wasn't aware of those guys, but it was pretty insane. And then basically I met some of the guys, like the bass player that ended up being on Cherry Street. He was from Michigan. So he came up there and he knew the singer and guitar player from Michigan. So it's like a bunch of Michigan people ended up in California.
Yeah, a Michigan band came out to California.
Yeah, so that was kind of unique. But just Guitar Center opened up a lot of avenues for me because I met a lot of connections through there and people I still talk to. I mean, like the band Lit, they were in high school and they were called Razzle back then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before I started Paris Records, I had a thing called Monroe Promotions because I did all our business. I did Metal Edge ads, Rip Magazine ads. And I did these ads and I'd put other bands in there. Like Razzle was one of them. So they were in, I knew Jeremy, talked to him every day back then and stuff. And
you guys still talk?
Pardon?
Do you still talk to him?
Yeah. They played Texas quite a few times. I go see them throughout here, but now I'm in College Station. It's a small college town. There's nothing up here. So there's not really any concerts up here. Mm-hmm. I just went down to Houston, seen Shinedown and Papa Roach. That was really cool. But mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just a thing I never planned on doing Paris Records. Just everything kind of, since I did the band business, I got the band a record deal. I booked their tours.
And who was your first record deal with Cherry Street? You guys
The first CD came out on Paris Records. That's how we started the label.
Oh, your first CD did.
Pardon?
Your first disc?
Yeah, it was self-titled. And we did it independently because we had distribution through Relativity, which is a total crazy story. We had a 3-song cassette and basically we started, you know, selling them at our shows. But then Tower Records, Joe was a manager at Tower Records. And that was the happening store on Sunset. I mean, everybody. I'd go up there and I'd see Steven Tyler buying stuff or Jane's Addiction singer. I mean, every time I was in there, was always somebody like famous buying stuff. And the manager, you know, said, I asked him, I go, we want to sell our cassette here. He goes, well, you know, all these bands bring in stuff, you know, whatever. If they don't sell, we don't give it back. We just toss it, whatever. But if you start selling, you know, we'll order more. So what we did is basically after all our shows and everywhere, we promoted just Tower Records on Sunset. This is where you have to buy our cassette. And so we sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And then Joe was like freaking out. He was just like, dude, I want to hook you guys up with distribution. I go, what's that? You know, I don't know anything about distribution. So he hooked us up with basically it was called Importan Distribution, which turned out they're owned by Relativity. And they had an office in New York and then they had one by Long Beach or somewhere out there. But basically they started carrying our stuff. And then they go, you know, you can't just sell it on, you know, Tower Records. So there's a Music Plus chain. They had like 77 stores. It was towers all over the place. But then I started meeting with all the buyers, becoming friends, inviting them out to our show at the Whiskey, Roxy, or the Zaris. And I became friends with all the people in the industry. And they started saying, you know, we had these full color posters, 24 by 36 full color posters. And they said, hey, we'll put your poster up, you know, in the stores. And I'm going, really cool. So, you know, we're like doing all this, setting all this stuff up. And they go, do you realize that we charge the label thousands of dollars to do that? They charge like, you know, Geffen Records, all this stuff. They were doing all this for free for us. Wow. So we're getting displays in all these stores. And, you know, we had, you know, just, it was crazy. And all that stuff kept just growing and growing. Then I started booking tours from Boston to Florida, Hawaii, playing all over the place with no tour support, nothing, totally unsigned.
And you were doing all this?
Yeah, I was doing all that stuff. And then I got us, basically after our CD came out, then we hooked up with Artie Mogo, which was a huge guy in the industry. He was a president of Capitol Records, and he had SBK, but he just sold SBK when Wilson Phillip, or those three girl singers, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He sold that off, and he started JRS, and he had an office right on Sunset. So, you know, basically, we did a deal with him. He had Asia, Stray Cats, and Kool and the Gang. He had, like, quite a few bands on his roster, but we're the only hard rock band, so we ended up getting a deal through him.
Right. So, were you guys a big draw out there live?
Yeah, we got the headline, you know, the Whiskey Go-Go, Gazzari's. We were the first band to get a colored star. Bill Gazzari had this like stars on the side of the building. So we got the first ones actually, it was all in color and stuff. That was really cool. And then Whiskey Go-Go, we had a massive show there because we're the first band in there after they filmed the Doors movie.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer. So we're like the first show back in there, and that was insane. We've actually videotaped that.
Is that online? I saw you guys have a lot of stuff online.
That might be online, some of it, or the Chumador, we had one. But I've got I got some footage, but I got to look into that. Because that was the most craziest show. But yeah, we did a lot of that, and then we'd go out and play for 2 months across the Midwest or down south, played Texas a lot, Colorado, and they gave us a lot of, you know, experience and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw you. I grew up in Florida during that time.
Oh,
and
really?
I saw you guys were at the Rocket Club, and I used to love the Rocket Club.
Yeah, the Rocket Club in Tampa, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of by Tampa Stadium.
That's right. We were hanging out there for a while because I remember Warrant was recording at Morrisound, Dog Eat Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew the guys Warrant because, you know, like Jerry and Eric came up and introduced us at shows. And that's eventually we ended up working with Eric and on our Squeeze Dry record on JRS. He brought in Pat Reagan, which did Shotgun Messiah, Kiss, you know, and recorded there and stuff. So we knew the guys more. So we were partying with those guys hardcore. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet. So coming up during that time around all these bands that later on went and became big bands, mm-hmm. I mean, who else did you hang around with at that time?
You know, I mostly did, you know, we'd go out and promote all the time on the strips. You'd always run in all these people.
Hand out flyers?
Doing flyering. And all that, we'd definitely promote it. We'd go out there like just in full force. But we'd go out and do concerts. Like Bon Jovi was playing. We'd go out there and take, you know, 2,000 flyers and just meet people all the time and just constantly like promote it. And then I'd come back, I'd sleep like 4 hours. You know, I'd come back and go hang out at Kinko's and do more flyers, you know, until like 4 o'clock in the morning, because there were 24 hours back then. And I was like working, you know, like just full time, just doing all the business for the band.
I hope some of the other guys were helping you.
Yeah, the business, I pretty much just, it just happened. I mean, I never, you know, I worked at music stores and stuff like that, but I was always getting sales, but just,
you probably enjoyed it too, huh?
Yeah. And it was fun. And, just that way we knew, you know, stuff was getting done, you know, mm-hmm. So, you know,
who was in your band now? Chris, Vandal was in your band, right?
Yeah. He was the singer. And Taz played guitar, and we had a few bass players. We had Jamie Scott in the beginning, which he went to Ty Kettle. He was in Ty Kettle. Okay. And he lives in Texas too. He lives right in Dallas. And then we had Kelly on drums, and we had Razzle before that. And then Red came in at the end. He mm-hmm. played bass, and he was in a band with Chris called Boneyard. So they knew each other, and he brought Red in at the end when we did the Squeeze Dry record mm-hmm. in our self-titled Squeeze Dry.
Chris sound, I was listening to some of the Cherry Street stuff, and I can't pinpoint who he kind of sounds like.
A lot of people say Britney Fox.
Yes.
Cinderella. That's
Britney Fox. I could not, it was like, I could not think of it. It's been bugging me all day.
Yeah, he did an Aerosmith tribute. Aerosmith, and, you know, so he kind of, his vocal style changed, you know.
Yeah.
You know. When he was in Cherry Street, it was kind of more like Brady Fox, Cinderella, you know, style. Because uh-huh. we're kind of AC/DC, these Motley Crue.
Uh-huh. Were they your influences?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Motley. And that was definitely, you know, just the whole, the 80s thing. It's just people like ask me about it all the time. It was such a crazy scene back then. Because it was, you could go up there and it'd be like, 5,000 people on the strip, just walking up and down, all these bands promoting, people there from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
People from Japan would be there, people from Europe. Cause there was no place like that ever, you know,
man, that had to be a great time. I lived it, but in Florida.
Gotcha.
I saw everything on TV and, you know, that stuff in LA. I was a little younger, but, I always wanted to do what you did and move out there, but I was too young at that time.
It was like, I got there just kind of, I wish I would have got there earlier, you know, and then we, it was kind of really helped us too, is we got on MTV. Mm-hmm. They did a segment. We found out MTV was going to be up there, and we knew a promoter that was working with Carla Diamond from MTV. And we got talking to her, and she invited us on there, and she interviewed us and Slash and Warrant and talking about pay to play. And that was like the Hollywood. Kurt, he was like the DJ guy, and Kurt Loader, I think.
Kurt Loader, yeah, yeah.
It was like one of the highest running things. It ran for like a month. They just ran this whole pay-to-play thing.
What was that? I don't remember that.
It was about talking about bands, pre-sold tickets and stuff. But for us, it worked. See, a lot of bands, there's so many bands out there, and every band tells you they're next Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue, every, you know. So how is the promoter supposed to know? So basically, for us, the pre-sale was guaranteeing when people bought tickets, they're going to come, maybe 90% of them at least. Because, you know, you could go out and hand out tickets. A lot of bands would just give their tickets away. Nobody would show up because they didn't pay nothing for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we would actually get the tickets for like $300-$400 and end up selling them and bring in $1,500 to $2,000. So we actually had money in advance before the show. So, and we knew those fans are going to be there, and you got like money for walk-ups. People would say, I'm here for Cherry Street, you know, so you'd get credit for that.
So if school me on this pay to play stuff. So they give you the tickets or they mm-hmm. sell you the tickets. How does that?
Yeah.
They sell you the tickets.
100 tickets or 200, but we'd always come back and get more because okay. the more money you make.
And then you can go sell them for whatever you want or do whatever you want to do with them?
I don't know if we had to pay $3-$4, $5. Depends on what show it was, what club. They're all different.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd sell them for, you know, $10, $12, $15. I mean, it varied all those. I don't remember. You know, it's like 30 years ago.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And so then do you keep all of the money that you sell the tickets for, or do you have to give a percent back to the club?
It could have been $400 or $600. We have to pay. And then if you get extra tickets and you pay more for those, but we always made like that way. We always had money because we take that money and buy ads in Band Magazine, mm-hmm. Rock City News, Screamer Magazine. There was all, we would constantly just put our money back into it
mm-hmm.
and spend it on flyers and stuff. And,
Mm-hmm. Was it always pay to play out there?
Not all the shows. You know, we had a lot of different shows that we, you know, just do, and they pay you on walk-ups or, you know, but when you're out there and there's 5 million bands, you know, but as long as you had a draw and stuff like that, you know, I mean, we might have played some shows that weren't pay to play. But
with so many bands out there, I mean, how do you get your foot in the door?
Well, we started out, they start you on a weekday, of course. I think it was started like on a Thursday or, you know, we play it. I think our first show up there was a Thursday on a Gazzari's or something like that. But we drew, you know, 100 people or 150, which is good on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And then they invite us back on a weekend, earlier spot. And you, like, the more draw you had, the bigger, you know, and eventually we only played the Gazzari's and we played like the Troubadour. We made a lot of money at the Troubadour. Those guys gave us like 400 or 500 tickets. So we made like, the 2000 or 2500, we just had all this. We did really well, but we wanted to play the Strip. So I don't know if we played the Churro more than once or twice. We played Gazzari's a lot, and the Whiskey Go-Go, and the Roxy. But we always would just do that, you know. But then we weren't doing shows all the time. We'd do a show like in Hollywood every 3 months or 4 months. You don't want to overplay.
And I would imagine that'd be a better way to do it.
Yeah, we got offered shows. The thing is, we started having a huge buzz that we got offered shows out of state. So we're making, you know, thousands of dollars a week playing Colorado. We play 4 shows and come back with like $2,500 in our pocket or something. We play like three or four shows, and we play Texas and get, you know. So I was basically we just got really good money playing all over the place. And then we come back and play Hollywood. And then just because you don't want to overplay, and then you saturate it and it's like, then nobody wants to come out and see it if you're playing every week or every month, you know?
Right. And then, so you guys went through that whole thing to get your band up there. And then you finally got a deal and released the CD. Came out when?
Well, it came out in 93.
On your label?
Yeah. No, okay. In like 92 in Paris, and then 93, it came out in, you know, BMG. But, you know, we had a tour, we signed it. Agency deal with Ashley Street Entertainment. They were handling Warrant, Peter Criss. But then we just had, you know, the usual band drama. It's, you look back at it now and go, God, that was stupid. You know, why did we break up, or, you know, or so-and-so quit? It doesn't matter now. But back then you look, you know, wow, that was dumb. We should have done that, you know, because that's right when our record came out, we broke up. So that was just like one of those, because the whole scene was changing. MTV, by that time, 93, it was all, you know, Soundgarden.
Yeah, I was going to say, so your album came out at the worst possible time for a band.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like, so basically when the band broke up, I ended up in Texas for a little while, but I moved back to Michigan for 3 years. And then basically just people were reaching out to me, you know, like bands. And, you know, since I did it for Cherry Street, they all knew I did that. So basically I did like a couple of compilation CDs, and then with, you know, one track from each band. And then basically I just started bringing in CDs, cassettes, and then I did ads of Metal Edge. And like Alan Toller was the son of the owner of Metal Edge magazine. He owned like 4 or 5 magazines. And I became friends with him, and I did like, started doing third page, half page, full page. Then I started doing 2-page spreads in Metal Edge magazine.
Oh, wow.
With all hands. And then Alan gave me a great deal. Then he gave me the opportunity he gave nobody else, that I did these samplers. He goes, hey man, you know, would you like to send a sampler out with the magazine? I go, no brainer. Yeah. So
yeah,
I did that. And I was working with CMC through a distribution company, and this guy at the distribution company was killer. He worked with CMC, all these labels. So basically, he'd say, hey, I'm working with this band, Widowmaker. I'm working with blah, blah, blah. So I would line them up ads of Metal Edge through my Paris ads, and I would do these samplers, and that exploded. Then I had customers from chain stores, Disc Union, which still, they just did an order for me. They've ordered for me for over 30 years. Wow. And Germany and Sweden, and my first year, it was insane because I was getting $5,000 orders every week from Japan, you know, and they're like, this is before the internet. I had to get a fax machine. They would just fax me order.
Where are we at in years on this? 90s, mid-90s?
Before that started kicking in, when I started doing Paris full-time, 93, 94, and it exploded. I had this company in Sweden called Megarock, which was doing six figures a year, which just, you know, I couldn't even keep up. I had two or three college kids come in as interns helping me, like with shipping. Hmm. And I was doing this out of my bedroom. I'm talking Amazon started in a garage. I started in my bedroom.
That's a good problem to have, though.
And then I expanded. My dad let me take over the whole garage, two-car garage. That was like, I thought I was big.
That's great, a dad.
So, and that was pretty wild. And it was just, it's just unbelievable. It just exploded. Yeah, I was like, I had no idea. I just never, you know, planned this. It just happened.
Is that the moment you realized that this was going to be a thing for you?
Yeah, it was hard to, like, I kept putting money in the bank and all this money was building up, but I had this guilt, is like, I can't take any money out. I got to like keep growing, you know, but eventually I'm like, hey man, I gotta pay the bills. So I started living off it, and I had a lot of great people, a lot of, you know, really, you know, good people that hooked up. And then, this company called me out of Memphis, Tennessee in 93, because I had Rocks Gang, Voodoo Love, and I didn't know who they were. They said they're called Selecto Hits. I didn't know. And they want to start ordering CDs, and they go, we like, you know, 500 of this, 1,000 of this. And I'm like, wow, you know, this, I was selling the stores direct, you know, and
I didn't take. Did you have all these CDs, or did you have to get them manufactured to fill the orders?
Backing up and just dumping out thousands of CDs a day. It was pretty wild, you know, and the guys in Selecta Hits, turns out, I didn't even know it. They invited me to go to a reunion down there in Memphis. And Tim Babishine, great guy, passed away years ago, just awesome guy. He really helped me out with knowledge and stuff. And he goes, you know who Selecta Hits is? And I go, no, man, I'm sorry, I don't. It's like, you know, Elvis, Johnny Cash. I go, well, yeah, Sun Records. He goes, that's Selecta Hits. It's Sam Phillips Jr., which is the nephew of Sam. It's Tom Phillips, was owner of Selected Hits. Tom Phillips was Sam's brother. And he's the guy seen the TV shows about Elvis or Jerry Lee Lewis. He was the manager of Jerry Lee Lewis. And so basically he started Selected Hits because he was doing the Sun Records 45, selling them after they got back, maybe some returns, and they started carrying artists. So basically it's the nephews and nieces of the Phillips family. And they're like the most awesome people in the world. I am so lucky because they've just like took me under their wing. I'm like, I don't think there's any other rock labels they work with. They do Jimmy Buffett. And
yeah,
before he passed away, they do a lot of stuff. They do a lot of artists like that. And
sounds like you were meant to do this, because it seems like whether you're in the right place at the right time or whatever it may be, or you're a great person, that's probably it, right? Why you keep getting hooked up with all these people that are helping you along your journey.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's all like just being honest. Like the Phillips family, they had like distribution companies would go bankrupt, belly up, but they'd go and deal with the bankruptcy and get the CDs back. They would never stiff anybody. I mean, I had offers to go hook up all these distribution companies coming, oh man, I can sell more for you, do this, blah, blah, blah. I go, man, there's no way. I got, you know, dude, I'm not gonna, these people are like family, you know, I've known them, you know, and just, I'd rather go with people that, you know, are honest, and they had a great reputation. And dude, I just felt lucky I could work with them, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Now, have all your bands been with like that 80s style of music, or?
Yeah. That's kind of what I know most of. And then when you have a label, I tried doing some, like I did Paul Di'Anno, solo CD with him. I did Vicious Rumors. I did some little different, but it's the thing is, I have connections with like magazines, radio, and I try to stick with AOR and rock, because that's what, you know, if I can't get promoted and get airplay or magazine reviews, then then it's going to be dead in the water. So I try to, I have to pretty much stick to a, you know, a certain style.
Are you now with your label now, is it just you or do you have a staff?
How's oh yeah. Now me.
Now what? Yeah, back
in the day, I had like, various people like shipping department because I was on the phone and dealing with, doing the business and stuff, the deals, contracts, getting the artwork done, manufacturing CDs, distribution. And then in 2006, I did something like when the music scene was really back again, 2006, it was rough, you know, it's a, you know, 9/11, 2000, 2001, all that. It just, you know, that I started Rock Nation, which, you know, I have a website still. And my wife thought it was kind of crazy. She didn't think, I hardly slept at all. I was living on 2 liters of Coke, coffee, and just, I had VJs. I had a 30-minute show. I interviewed Judas Priest. I mean, I interviewed, God, everybody, every band under the sun. I did
What was the show on? Was it just online? It was on,
well, that's the cool thing I did is I figured out how to get Rock Nation TV on 250 channels on Time Warner and Comcast. What I did is I've never seen anybody do this. What I did is I couldn't do ads, advertising, but it was on public access. So I had friends and people I worked with in different cities. I would send out the DVDs, the 30-minute shows, all produced, in and out, you know, editing. And I had it produced in Hollywood. My drummer, Razzle, which is in Cherry Street, ended up being a really pretty big time, like producer, editing, worked on a lot of videos and TV shows. And he would edit the shows for me, just really good production. And like Rob Helford sent me all his videos of his stuff on the solo bands. And we put the videos in there, and then Roadrunner sent me Nickelback and all various bands. And I had all my bands on there. And then we'd interview all these people. I had DJs in East Coast, West Coast. Then I had interview people, probably 5 or 6 people did interviews for me. Cause what I did is I put out a newspaper, and what I did is I stuck it in 750 CD stores at the peak nationwide. And that was insane. I mean, every 2 months I had to do the advertising. I handled all that stuff except, you know, the interviews. And we had that, it grew from like, you know, 50 stores, 100, 300, when it was up to 750, in Texas City, where they made the newspapers, they had to bring a semi truck down there because we had 750 boxes, and I had to get I'd bring all the labels with me, and we had like 10 people lying putting all these together in the boxes and labels. Did it every 2 months, because if I would have did it every month, I probably would have had a stroke.
Wow!
But we did that, and the TV show was out every week. Like I think I had was it 55 or 60, at least, or 57 episodes?
Wow. How long did it run? That was a week?
We did like a couple of years.
Okay.
And basically, we got to the point where I started getting kidney stones, Matt. It was really taking my health. It was like, it was just pounding caffeine. Like, you can't, there's no way physically. I'm doing the label, Rock Nation TV, Rock Nation newspaper. It's like, you know,
too much.
Yeah, it was too much. So I just took it's online now. Still Rock Nation. I do an issue.
I saw that.
That's, you know, so.
So that's like an online magazine type thing, right?
Yeah. Now it's just online, and I'm going to keep it going and stuff. And then I do also sampler CDs. What I do is I put PDF files. I can put 4 or 5 issues on a sampler, so people can put it in their computer and read it while they're listening to samples. But now most people don't have CD drives in their computers anymore.
Yeah,
so.
Right. I don't have one. I can't listen to the sample.
Yeah, just they're MP3s, because if I do MP3s, I can do up to 99 IDs on a CD. You can put up, I've had samplers with 99, you know, samples on it.
Wow.
So, you know, but most, you know, I still do the samplers. I get them out with my orders and stuff. But then I've mostly I think really helps just having it online.
And these sample CDs, they consist of all your bands?
Yeah, I put all my bands on there, and various bands, labels I've worked with. to you. Like from, there's other labels in Germany that I've worked with, you know, and Italy, just, you know, I worked with Frontiers. I actually did their first distribution with Frontiers through Select Edits when they first started out, and they were doing distribution for me.
So you were doing it here for them. They were doing it over there for you.
Yeah. They were carrying some of my bands and getting them in Italy. They do distribution and they had a few bands.
How do you find your bands? Do they come to you or do you keep an eye out for bands? And if you hear one,
yeah, just word of mouth, you know, okay. And then I kind of like, you know, hear about some of your, that most of the stuff I get sent isn't even what I do, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but I pretty much just now I'm 62 now. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm only going to do 3 artists a year, and I'm doing, like, I got Last World just came out, you know, January 5th, and Babylon ID is wrapping up a new studio record. They did one for Frontiers before. I just did their live CD last year. So I could spend a long time and I could work that record for months, you know, like Frontiers, Derek even said in interviews, they're putting out so many releases a month. They basically work your record for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then that's it, you know.
Yeah.
Up there, and it's just, but I'm going to work it for months, constantly set up interviews, more airplay. Mm-hmm. And Mike Branvold is my publicist. And it was kind of interesting. When I first started out, he was just messing around with websites. And he designed my first website, Paris Records.
Way back then.
Yeah, back then.
Okay.
And then I was kidding with him the other day that, because he basically did start doing websites, and then he went to work with Gene Simmons, did the whole Kiss Online, and he did Britney Spears, he did everybody, like he got into publicity work now. He was real successful with the WASP tour. That WASP tour really exploded here. And so it's working with him and stuff, helping me, you know. He does really professional, like, press releases, and, you know, and he's going to be doing setup interviews. He did really well with Derek, because, you know, Derek's a great guy from Babylon, Derek Davis, and people enjoy talking to him. So he'll set up a lot of interviews and stuff like that, and reviews and stuff.
So when's that record coming out?
Well, I can't set the date till they finish it. They're hoping to finish recording here and soon, you know, a month. I don't put any rush on it. Just, it's got to be done right, you know. Just when done.
Then no deadlines.
End of April, May, kind of, you know, it's hard to, you know, I can't say any dates yet, but we have 2 release dates a month on Fridays through Select Edits, because they have a promotional book they do. So, you know, once we get the release date, it's all wrapped up, mastered, artwork, ready for seed plant, and then Michael do a major press release. And then we'll work the press and all that good stuff.
And you reissued Cherry Street, your record, right?
Yeah, I just reissued. First, it was like this guy in Russia was, he got a whole, there was a fan of ours in Japan that took like a bunch of our demos and had on a CD. Well, this guy in Russia just copied our flyers off the internet, and he was selling on eBay for like $100, $150, you know. And I had a lot of people buying them. And my wife's a lawyer. I sent, you know, I don't want to come down hard on eBay, because then, you know, I don't want to get blackballed or whatever. I don't want. So I just go, well, you know what? The best way to get rid of this guy is I'll put it out and I'll do it with, I got all the original photos. So that it's not just copy scans off a flyer off the internet, which you get all grainy. I have all the original photos. And then, a guy that I've worked with for years, I mean, he used to master my stuff before, Anthony Fox, and he's pretty known drummer. I mean, he was in an Alice Cooper Poison video. He was in Beautiful Creatures. I put a Beautiful Creatures CD out for him, Deuce. And he started doing mastering, and he used to master all my stuff. And then he just recently did Ace Frehley, Buck Cherry. He works with a major producer, and he's did a lot of records, Night Ranger.
And mastering.
Yeah. Mastering, okay. But no, he records and mixes.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Mixing. He still records some of it, but he does a lot of mixing. So I had him remaster it. And then, I re-put it out, Twisted Rude, Sticky Sweet. I did that. And so that way it's killed the sales, the guy in Russia, 'cause, you know, he can buy it for $12.
Did it work?
Yeah, just the guy's gone. I haven't seen him. I haven't looked recently.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to buy his piece of garbage that sounds terrible, that this stuff's been remastered. I had original DAT tapes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even, his was just off a cassette. The cassette transferred to a CD. So then after that, I did Squeeze It Dry that we released. I re-released that in a self-titled record we had on Paris Records. And, you know, it's there's a lot of people, like, they're still out there that, you know, like the band and, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know.
That's awesome.
I've been in touch with a lot of those people. It's great, you know.
Yeah, you've done a lot of stuff with, I mean, I think you did some LA Gunn stuff, right?
Yeah, I did LA Gunn. That was a really big one for me because Steve Riley, we were working out the deal and stuff, and we did Shrinking Violet, and Jizzy was in the band. And right when we did the deal, I think the record was just done. We're getting impressed. They got the Poison tour, the opening slot on the Poison tour. And I went out, hit about five or six of the concerts. We did flyers at them, promoted the record. And that sold really well. It did really well and stuff. That was great. That was a big one. And then another big one I did was just distribution. I didn't actually press it on my label, but I, you know, since I worked with Eric Turner, that we did the, they just sent me, you know, thousands of CDs. I put them through Select Hits, and they got on the Poison tour. And that was, you know, so I had two bands that did really well on the Poison tours because that's like, that was the big festival during the summer. The Poison went out, like Cinderella with them, and
And you recently put out Paul Idell's Scream Therapy, which I've had Paul on my show to talk about that record. But you've worked with Paul for a while, right?
Yeah, Paul, that it was interesting because when I moved to Austin, Texas, because I was in Michigan, and I moved down to Austin because Taz from Cherry Street lives there. And I stayed with him for, and until I bought my first house, and I had a warehouse down there. And basically, my sound engineer guy, I had a studio, 24 track digital ADAT studio, and he was the sound man for Dangerous Toys. And then, you know, and I knew Jason and Paul, but I got to know Paul and stuff, and they'd come out, you know, come out in my boat and stuff. I had this cabin cruiser boat, I like Travis, and it's like Colorado River. It was a blast. It was in a marina. I had like rock stars, movie stars out there. Forrest Whitaker was in town doing
the
Bolt movie. He came out my boat because a friend of mine was working on a movie. And, you know, Derek St. Holmes and Ted Nugent, he was recording with me. You know, Jason McMasters and Every Mother's Nightmare. I mean, just all the bands were coming in town. You know, I'd have them all on my boat and party and stuff. But Paul was a great guy. And I told him he had this band he wanted to record, and it was a side band. It wasn't Dangerous Toys. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, I'd like to record in the studio and stuff. And I go, yeah. And, you know, cause I was charging bands to record there. And I just started thinking, my wheels are turning. I go, I love Dirty Looks, cause he was in Dirty Looks. I go, you know what? I've always wanted to do an AC/DC style band and, record. Tell you what, if you come in and do a record for me, do like an AC/DC style CD, nine songs, then I'll record your band for free. So basically he goes, oh, that's because for him, he could write that stuff literally in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And go and record it. So the first, he goes, who do you want to sing on it? And I was thinking of AC/DC. I loved Rhino Bucket. So I'm thinking George from Rhino Bucket. Before I could even call George, Jason mentioned it to Jason, and Jason goes, screw that, man. I want to sing on it. Before we met.
I love the Broken Teeth stuff.
Yeah. So it's basically that, just out of that just came Broken Teeth, and it turned into a touring band and did various CDs. And I remember we recorded at my studio, and I'll never forget, I did backups on it. Me and Jason, I think we had one other person, but it was so much fun recording with Jason because he's right there, and we're, you know, just the guy's just a total professional, man. I mean, the guy's just like, he's been doing it all his life. Just like,
yeah. You were playing guitar on that record?
I just sang backups.
Just backups. Okay.
Yeah. We did the backups. Okay. So I totally hear my voice. I mean, it was on the first CD. So I did the backup vocals along with Jason. And I think there's one other person I can't remember, but then just worked with Paul on that. And then he had another side project called Adrenaline Factor. And they did videos. It was on Rock Nation TV. And they did some shows. I put on some network shows down there, Paris Network shows. And so I worked with Paul on that. And just, you know, then he had 99 Crimes. We did that. He had a side band. They did a lot of shows too. Mm-hmm. And then he called me out of the blue. He goes, "Hey, I got a record ready to go. I got a show booked next week." I'm going, "Whoa." No warning. He's like, "Okay."
So this is the Scream Therapy stuff?
Scream Therapy, okay. Yeah. And he sent it to me and just like, it's ready to go. You know, he just, that's nice working with professionals because they just, you know, they get it all wrapped up. And because all like, they know what I want. You know, I've worked with them for so many years. They all know what I can do. So they bring the stuff prepared to me. So then I just have, all I got to do is, you know, get it to the CD plant, go through the artwork, everything lined up and everything, distribution and mm-hmm. promotion, all that good stuff.
Make it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that's a great record. It's a great record.
Oh, definitely. It's doing real well. I think it's going to be longevity. It's where it's still selling. Like it's just growing and he's doing more shows. He's got more shows lined up. He's got a video hitting tomorrow, Thursday, for Alibi. He did a lyric video. Now he's got a full-on video because he shot a live show. So that's coming out tomorrow. So he's planning on releasing, you know, keep it promoting. He wants to keep that going, you know, as a side project. But he's also, you know, he does guitar lessons. You know, it's just, the guy's nonstop. He's a workaholic like me, you know. He's got 30 Licks is still doing various shows and they're looking, hopefully it'd be really cool to have those guys record some music, you know?
Mm-hmm. The Toys have some new music. You ever do anything with them?
Yeah, they're just, they're so busy, man. They all have stuff going on. Jason does the rock school, some kind of various rock school. He does that. Just, you know, he has a lot of tribute bands, different bands. He's been in tribute bands. So they're all so busy. You know, it's hard for them to, you know, find time, you know.
Well, it sounds like you got a good thing going there, Tom.
Well, it's kind of winding down. I'm not going to retire, but I'm going to just, I can't, I've been doing 7 days a week for like 30 years, man. Yeah. It's just, I mean, I would take vacations and take weekends off, but literally, you know, I just got it from my mom and dad, you know, they're workaholics and just, you know, it's not really work for me. It's just a lifestyle. It's just like, I love it, the business of it and stuff. So
Do you have any kids or no?
Pardon?
Do you have any kids?
Oh no, I just have two dogs. I like dogs. I got me and my wife, we have two schnauzers. They're spoiled.
I was just asking because maybe you could pass it on to the kids.
Oh yeah.
No. You can't do that with the dogs though.
Yeah, do it with dogs. Yeah, no.
Well, you could, but it might not go too well.
Yeah, probably.
All right, man. Well, you got a good thing. Like I said, you got a good thing going there.
Oh, and, thanks.
You know, I've listened to a lot of the stuff. A lot of stuff's good. Yeah, I appreciate you joining me.
Well, I appreciate the. You know, it's cool. I appreciate the promotion. I enjoyed your show when I saw Paul's. I go, wow, this guy is really, I like the show. It was real.
Oh, thanks.
Just, it was smooth. And it's just kind of like you said, it's like, just kind of like let it flow and
yeah,
not just trying to get through all the questions real quick. You know, I like it.
So if people want to check out Paris Records, if they're not familiar with it, or even if they are, where can they buy the CDs?
Yeah, just go to www.parisrecords.com, Paris Records, and on Facebook, I mean, everywhere, and then rocknation.us for the, you know, Rock Nation promotion. But
awesome.
All the CDs are available. They're up there. Okay. And then, of course, all the CDs are available on Amazon, and, you know, various websites.
Right. And you ship worldwide?
Yeah, I ship Japan, Germany, but a lot of it, a huge percentage now, I just select it. So I just ship my stuff to Memphis. I do two orders a week. When Mondays, Wednesdays, it's nice. I just do two big orders, ship them to them, and then they take care of Amazon. And Alliance Distribution. They ship out to various stores. And I'd rather give those guys, since they're so loyal to me, I'd rather give them a lot more of the business so then they make more money. Because if I try to do everything myself, then it's nothing left for them, you know. So
yeah. Yeah. You're a good man.
I try.
All right, buddy. Well, again, thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And I'll definitely be sharing this on Facebook.
Awesome.